This is the Coconetics Podcast. Episode 23 for February 5th, 2012. Happy New February. Hi, welcome back to another episode of the Coconetics Podcast. Actually, to be honest, the episode for this one, episode 22, I recorded on January 10th, 2011. So it's a bit more than a year. So I hope you can forgive me. And I'm very rusty. Don't know how that comes across. But, well, there were so many people asking me to start a podcast again. Amongst these, myself. Because, you know, there are other podcasts that I would recommend to iOS developers, for the most part, Build and Analyze with the maker of Instapaper. But lately, this has deteriorated much in quality, and they talk more about electronic gadgets and anything but iOS development. So I figured there needs to be a show like the Coconetics Podcast, which specifically tackles the topics that we developers are interested in. So let's get right to it. I've got a couple of news items and I would like to discuss a couple of things afterwards. In general, if you have any idea that about something that you would like me to discuss on the show, or if you like to call in, be my guest. You can contact me, oliver@coconetics.com. We can then Skype. And, well, we just record that and let everybody listen in to the wise things that we both have to say. Okay, now for the news. At the mid-January publishing event, where Apple released the iBooks Author tool, well, actually, they should have named it iBooks Textbook Author to save themselves much grief. Because people kept dissing them for not being able to make actual iBooks with it. So it's called iBooks Author, but you cannot make regular iBooks with it. That means EPUB iBooks. But you can only make textbooks with those. Now, the other thing they got into trouble is for actually not clearly formulating in the end user license agreement that they don't own the rights to your thoughts and words, but they just reserve the right to be the store of choice if you actually want to sell something that you make with the iBooks textbook author. Well, you can debate whether this is good or bad, but, well, if you make a free tool, you should have the right, if somebody's going to make money with that, to get a cut. So, but that's not actually what I want to talk about in this case. I just wanted to mention that there was this presentation, and there are some hints related to an iPad 3 in relation to that. On January 26th, Apple announced that you can now manage default language settings in iTunes Connect. Let me read what they wrote. You can now edit the default language for app metadata anytime. If you have multiple apps, you have the added flexibility of managing metadata localizations for each individual app. Any localizations you add will be displayed automatically based on customer's OS or iOS language settings. Otherwise, the default language you select will be displayed to all customers. Learn more in the latest iTunes Connect developer guide. Then on February 1st, Apple announced higher data limits for turn-based matches in Game Center. You might know that in Game Center you can send game data around to other multiplayer participants. Up until now, the limit for that had been 4 kilobytes. And Apple kind of realized that 4 kilobytes is not very much if you do turn-based games, which could be anything from just a game of chess to some really involved real-time strategy thing. And now being able to send 64 kilobytes instead of 4, I guess you can make these turns that much more rich. More information about that is to be found on the developer portal. Another thing that was due by the end of January was that holders of an encryption registration number, ERN, had to self-report the apps they ship containing encryption to there's a US Bureau of Commercial something something. I don't have it open, unfortunately. Well, the story about this is if you have such a number, you have to send them a comma-separated values file, which is basically a text format for an Excel spreadsheet where each of your app is one line. It just says it's an app and that's the name and so on. I'll talk about who needs such encryption numbers in a minute. First, let's quickly refer back to the hints about an iPad 3 coming soon that were to be found in the iBooks update, as well as the whatever content iBooks author creates. There's first and foremost, you see many instances of an Add2X artwork. So Add2X on an item that, not an item, on iBooks, which are only viewable on iPad, basically tells us that the next iPad will have double the resolution. And I did a benchmark some time ago, meaning that since double resolution is 4 times the number of pixels, and you would want default screens to load and display in a reasonable amount of time, that means that the iPad 3 actually has to have 4 times at least the graphics performance of the iPad 2. So otherwise, the decompressing of the loading image would take so long that it's a couple of seconds for the app to come up. So if Apple is doing an iPad 3 and it has twice the horizontal and twice the vertical resolution, 4 times the number of pixels, then the GPU needs to be beefed up tremendously. And well, having to have both iPad 2, iPad 1 resolution graphic and the iPad 3 resolution graphic means that actually the resources of apps will go up 5 times in file size. So everything that you now have for single resolution, you need to have another time with 4 times as many pixels. So that means 5 times as many pixels in total if you still ship your graphics as bitmaps. Now, that will certainly become a problem for apps like, I'd say, a Wired app or magazine apps, because there's no reasonable support or no support whatsoever for vector graphics on the iPad. So that's where another hint in the iBooks thing is of interest. You see lots of references to SVG, scalable vector graphics, in there. So not at this very moment, the only way how you can display SVG files officially in iOS is via WebKit, which has a parser and a renderer for SVG, but there's nothing official. So if you wanted to use SVG files instead of PNGs or JPEGs, then you would have to convert them into bitmaps. Or there's an open source project that I stumbled across some time ago that actually renders SVG files for you in a UI view. I would bet that Apple would finally give us support for vector graphics no later than the iPad 3 launch. Because otherwise, I'm absolutely certain that they know about this problem. Because if they did some performance testing and say, have a magazine app that has twice the resolution in its resources, scalable vector graphics are a great thing to get around the space that needs, because fonts and text are rendered with vectors, and they are basically they have the same file size regardless of what resolution you use them at. So I think this will be the next big thing for Apple, to give us some sort of hardware accelerated vector rendering, possibly. Doesn't have to be too high level. I think if they leverage the accelerate framework for these vector things, as well as programmable GPU, as you would know it from OpenCL for open, you can do calculations on the GPU. And of course, there will be a specific new Apple processor, probably an A6. I'm thinking that will be the big thing for this year. Vector graphics, basically. Okay, that much about the iPad 3 and Retina graphics. There's another thing that I want to briefly discuss. That is about, do you or do you not need an encryption registration number for apps that just have an HTTPS API? And this is a dilemma where you get different answers from depending on who you ask. If you ask Apple, they say, yeah, you need to register for everything. If you ask the US government, they say, well, we have this blah, blah, blah long list and exceptions, and there is some, if it's about security or antivirus or information security, then there's exceptions, but you still need to register and so on. And when you then go back to Apple and ask them, well, they said, then they just say what they said, but that's not actually what the majority of developers are putting any stock in. If you have to have the opportunity to ask one of the security guys, employees, that is, at Apple, which I had the opportunity to at last WWDC, there's a totally different story. And I specifically asked about this, and the answer I got was, you are not doing any encryption. These rules are basically meant to force people who invent their own encryption algorithms and implement them, so stuff that the US government doesn't know how to take apart, because it's not documented and not public and whatever, then they want you to register, and you shouldn't export this technology to terrorist countries or whatever. But on the other side, if you use standard technologies like HTTPS, or for that matter, don't actually do any encryption in your apps, because if I use HTTPS, I still have an NSURL connection. I just changed the scheme to HTTPS. Then technically, I'm not doing any encrypting. The encrypting happens by the OS, and for the operating system, Apple does have the proper registrations and licensing and everything. Because think of it like this, if you have a web page, and this has a certificate installed, so you can access it over HTTPS. There's no way that the US government would require all these people with secure sites to get a encryption registration number. So I was told by this very security consultant slash employee that for a simple API that just kind of uses it to authenticate a user or to safely transport some documents, say, but you're not saving the data in encrypted form on your devices, or you also don't, encrypt it with your own high security thing, then you're safe. And so the unofficial answer basically is, if you don't do your own encryption and if you don't ask, then you're fine. Yeah, you just tick off the question, no, I don't do encryption. And so that's basically how two-thirds of the people I talked about, talk with, who have secure APIs in their apps are doing it. The other third, one is a maker of a database, and he, of course, saves data in an encrypted form on the user's device. So he needed to get this ERN. But the thing is, better to ask for forgiveness than to ask for permission. So that's basically the gist of it. It's unfortunate that Apple doesn't step forward and clarify that, because that's one thing I also asked this security consultant. It would be great if Apple basically made a guide. If you do this, then this is what you need to do. If you do this, then this is what you do. But instead, everywhere where it's on the website, they just refer you to some frequently asked questions of the US government and don't really, I don't know what they are afraid of, basically. It's just, it seems to me they are afraid of the US government, that they would get into trouble with these. So they just go like what they said and cross their arms in front of their chest and let you be the one who has all the pains of trying to find out. So that's that. Yeah, just don't say that you use encryption if it's just the NSUR connection with HTTPS, and don't save any encrypted file, and that's it. There's one other thing regarding automated retain or automated reference counting, ARC or ARC as they call it. I had once somebody tell me, we can't use DT Core Text yet because our app is still not on ARC. And I just want to tell you, this is nonsense. ARC is a technology that basically happens for the most part at compile time. So when you build your app and ARC is enabled, then the compiler will insert the necessary retains and releases into the code. Basically right before it's being compiled. And then when it is being compiled, it is as if you had written these in there at the perfect spots. So the compiled binary that comes out of this, which is either an app or in our case, a static library, you can use that in a non-ARC project very easily. There's a special linker flag that you just add to the other linker flags. I think it's something like minus obg minus arc or so. You can get the exact flag if you look at the DT Core Text README, which is my open source project to render HTML. There in this README, you see the flags you need to use a arc static library in your non-ARC project. Okay, well, we already have 20 minutes. So if you have any questions, or if you want to be on the show, or if you have any comments, yeah, just let me know. I might reactivate my Google Voice voice chat. No, not it's not called voice chat. It's called Google Voice. What's it called? Answering machine. so that I can insert your comment into the episodes, or we could just talk on air. Yeah, we can just you phone me on Skype and I record it and we have a show. And of course, you can tell people about your services and your opinions. That would be great. Actually, before we close, let me also say thank you for the support you've been giving me. At this moment, I have about 4,200 followers on Twitter. About a year ago, that was half that. And I find that every now and then, if I have a pressing question, I always get a very quick answer. So that's something you can use me for. Also, if you have a good question, something that would make a good blog post, or something that I could discuss on this podcast, then just let me know. Tweet it to me at Coconetics. Tweet it to me, mail it to me, oliver@coconetics.com, and we'll all be happy, because I like to find out how things work, and especially so in the iOS area. So that's it for this show. Hope to see you again soon.